Columbus has trusted Atlas Butler for heating and cooling since 1921. They didn't start out doing plumbing because home plumbing wasn't really a thing yet. Yeah, they've been around a while.
Call 1-800-FURNACE.
The last word.
With Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
So happy to have Patrick Frayne with us, who know the voice from many years on The Last Word, although we don't see enough of him these days. That's probably because he's busy off writing books. He'd had his first book, about 5 years ago, I think it was. Okay, let's do your stupid idea. But he now has a new book. He has his first ever novel. Finally, young Patrick Frayne at the age of 51.
Yeah, at the very young, fresh-faced age of 51.
Tell us what it is. Tell us all about it, please.
So it's a book about a bunch of people in middle age. Surprise, surprise.
Experts in a dying field.
Yeah, who used to be in a band in a music scene 20 years earlier, and there was a tragedy and they broke up and went out into different parts of the world, and now they're all back together in Dublin. And it's kind of a book about kind of middle-aged death, failure, what community means. And it kind of goes out from being a book about a band and a music scene to like a bunch of different voices in and around Dublin as these kind of core members of this band trying to figure out what life is now that they are in middle age.
Hold on, is this a thinly disguised memoir? You were in a band, weren't you, when you were in your 20s?
It's not a memoir that, like, the stuff in it isn't directly, like, from my life. But there's definitely a thing. I interviewed Colin Barrett for the paper a few years ago, and he said this thing that really stuck with me about how he thinks fiction works, which is, he says, there's all these snapshots in your head from your memory, like lines that were said to you or images or vague dreamlike memories you don't quite know the context of. And he thinks that a lot of fiction is you going into those things and exploring out and creating a new world with them. And so there's loads in this book that is definitely, you know, like remixes or bits from my real life, but there's no one, like none of the characters in the book, people keep going, these definitely real people. Like none of the characters in the book are real people, but there's definitely bits of real people and real things that happened kind of in and amongst it.
How keen were you on having a music career?
It was music is still really important to me. Like, and I still play, me and my wife Anna would play and sing a lot with friends and in sessions and things. When I was in my 20s, it was the focus of my life for like a decade. You know, it was like me and my friends had a band and we had a label. We had a band called the National Prayer Breakfast, which was really hard to pronounce. So we changed it to the NPB. We'd ring up venues and go, "Hi, we're the National Prayer Breakfast." And they'd go, "The Nashville Perverts." You'd have to go, no, the National Prayer Breakfast.
I always thought you were going to say, we don't open that early in the morning to accommodate gigs.
So it was like, we went with NPB, and then me and Anna had a band called El Diablo at the same time, which was more like folky country music. And we put out our friends' bands, and there was a lovely music scene. This is like the late 90s, early noughties, of kind of DIY musicians putting out their own records and touring, and there was a network. And when I meet any of those people now, I think there's a kind of sense of a shared experience, you know, like a shared dream life or fantasy world that we all existed in and around Dublin that I still think is really healthy.
But when you did that, was it all just about existing in the now, just enjoying it? Or did you have a sort of an ambition? Did you want to make it big? Did you want to crack the United States? All those sort of things.
Like a lot of young people, I had confused ambitions. So I simultaneously wanted to be like this ethical DIY kind of punky kind of band and somehow also crack the United States and become a multimillionaire if I could do both at the same time. Like I definitely wanted to live a life through music. Like I was, you know, we were doing other things and I was doing little bits of journalism around the edges. It was the idea was we would be doing this for the rest of our lives.
And were you writing your own songs, your own music?
Yeah, we were like, and it came from the DIY punk thing. So we, like, early on, we couldn't play very well, which is I still think the best way to start a band. It saves you from the excesses of being in a band. Like, it saves you from, like, when I started learning guitar, I was really into like bands like Dire Straits and Eric Clapton. And then I met my friend Dara, who deprogrammed me. And
deprogrammed?
Yeah, and he basically went, no, you can't do that. And we started getting into like the punkier stuff, like The Clash or The Dead Kennedys. And I always liked melody. So then we kind of got into like, you know, The Pixies or Nick Cave. And
I think this is relevant to experts in a dying field as well, because bands were the thing then, wasn't it? It was sort of a communal experience, whereas now it seems everyone's a solo artist.
Yeah, and I'm a huge defender of the idea of bands. I think everyone should form a band, and I think you should form a band, Matt. Like, there's something mad about a bunch of people, like, of different skill levels, different ambition levels, having to do something where there's very little money involved and having to figure out a way of getting that done, like how to produce a record, how to print up a record and sell it and get it in the shops when there's no real financial motive, because if anything, it's an expensive hobby, not a business. Whereas the solo thing, I think it's a product of economics. I think that an awful lot of younger musicians now, there's not many places to practice, so it's easier to work away from your bedroom. The technology allows you to work without a bass player and a drummer and a guitarist. You can kind of do it all yourself, which is good. It can be amazing and create amazing music, but there's definitely something you get from a mad communal creative endeavor, you know, just working collaboratively with
other people. But you also get fights and arguments and breakups as well, don't you?
They're character building, Matt. They're very character building. Like, I learned the title of my last book comes from a technique I learned. The last book was called Okay, Let's Do Your Stupid Idea. And my technique was, and it's how I deal with all creative conflict now, is instead of arguing over the idea, just try it.
Is that how you deal with your editors in the Irish Times?
It's how I deal with everyone, Matt. It's like, it's when somebody has an idea and you don't think it's great.
Is this how Anna gives you an idea and you just go along with it, is it?
What I learned from being in a band is 50% of the time you're wrong, right? So 50% of the time you're right. But if you fight the idea, it ends up living a lot longer because the fight gives it energy in the other person's head. Whereas if you just try the idea, then you try it and you get it out of the way.
So you'd have failed as a dictator, wouldn't you? Because a lot of people would just say, we're doing it my way. You don't. You just do it the other person's way.
There's something slightly manipulative in what I'm suggesting here, basically.
Passive-aggressive approach, is it?
It's not even passive-aggressive. It's just, it allows everyone to feel heard, and then you kind of get your way anyway over time. But there is...
Oh, subtle genius, Machiavellian almost.
It is you who say it. But yeah, no, like, there's... The long and short of it is, I think the band thing taught me more about dealing with like people and how to get things done than anything I've ever done in the professional world.
There's loads of listeners who will remember you from when you used to do TV with us here on the, and they'd be reading you in the Irish Times on a regular basis, doing interviews with people or writing about your observations on television in particular, which you love doing. But actually going to write your novel, in this first novel, that's a very individual pursuit, isn't it? Okay, I know you'll have an editor who you'll talk to, but I mean, that must be an awful lot of time on your own working on this. How did that suit you as a former band member?
By the time I was getting edited, and I've said this to my editor, it did remind me of being in a band, like the editing process, because when you're working with other people, you have to, it's really good. Other people's input is amazing because it makes you stand outside yourself and go, what does this look like to someone else? So that's a really important part of the process. But before then, there's a really good writer called Anne Lamott who has this thing about writing, which is when you're writing your first draft, you have to write with the door open, just allow everything in. And then when you're doing your edit, you have to write with the door closed and kind of leave stuff outside and cut things. And there's something about the first draft where, like, I really enjoyed doing the first draft of this book, where I was kind of like, the book is quite experimental in some ways. Like, I think it's an easy read, but like, I have different types of chapters. Like, some chapters are, one chapter is a bad review of the band, which is based on bitter experience. I know that like one tiny chapter is a flyer for the band. I've got some staves, musical staves in there. So I had a lot of fun just finding ways to tell this story from different perspectives and also in different forms. It's a little bit like a theater script, a bit like a play. And this was all just me trying to figure out like little angles, little ways in, because I wanted to have, the one thing I did learn from journalism, like I love reporting and I love going out to talk to people. And if that's taught me anything, it's that there's kind of no real lead characters in the world, that everything is a collective thing, that there's no stereotypes, there's no bit parts. When you talk to anyone for longer than 5 minutes, you realize that they're an individual with their own little idiosyncrasies and weirdnesses. So I wanted to tell this story from different perspectives. So there's the members of the band, there's kind of hangers-on, there's different friends that they have around the city, and there's a small chapter narrated by a fox, you know.
I was going to bring in the foxes. What's your thing with foxes?
Love foxes.
Why?
We were walking, they're all over the city, and like every time we're walking late at night around Marino, you'll spot a fox, and I think there's something magical about them. I read a book by a now forgotten Anglo-Irish writer called Lord Dunsany, and he was huge. He was, and no one remembers him anymore. He was a literal lord. He wrote fantasy books, and he's one called The King of Elfland's Daughter, which was a huge influence on Tolkien. But in his book, he talks about foxes as the one animal that can go in and out of different worlds. They go from our world into the, you know, the fairy world next door and back. They just wander between them. And I love that idea. Whenever I see a fox, I feel like they've just come from some other weird place. And one Christmas recently, we were coming from my sister-in-law's house, and there was a strange golden fox. It had a different color. Like, there was nothing wrong with it. It was just slightly different colour in a kind of...
Was this very late at night after a party, was it, that maybe your vision was somewhat different?
You're projecting, Matt. I was totally teetotal and my mind was fresh and sharp. But it just... And it stopped 10 yards away from us. And it's really stuck with us. It just stared at us for a while before running off. And I kind of put that in the book from another character's perspective. And then it was like a fun way to kind of filter all of these experiences I've had in the city into something that has this core story, but I wanted it to tell a little kind of story about the wider city from my perspective.
Are you going to become a full-time novelist? We're not going to lose you to journalism because you're one of the main reasons for reading the Irish Times.
Thank you, Matt. No, I love journalism, and I'd like to write more novels, and I'd like to, I'm a bit creatively greedy, so I like to do different things.
And it just strikes me, you know, lots of people in music, their best work is done young often.
Yeah.
And they say that sometimes about novelists, but does that have to be the case? Because surely all of the experiences that you've had in life and all the people that you've met, surely is that given you a perspective to make you write better now that you've turned to novels?
I wrote a piece for The Guardian. I wrote an essay for The Guardian the other week about being a slightly tongue-in-cheek, but also quite serious about being a 51-year-old debut novelist. And I was talking a bit about that. And also there's a lot of great writers who start late. You know, Louise Kennedy, who wrote Trespasses, is an amazing writer. She was in her mid-40s when she ever wrote anything. And Wendy Erskine was quite old when she started. She's a really good writer as well. Tessa Hadley, the British, these are all writers I really like.
Yeah, and I'm sure because you really like them, they won't be offended by you describing them as old.
I should have thought that through. I mean,
they had experienced more of life.
Writers, excellent writers starting a bit later. We're not old. We're differently young. That's what I'm going to go with.
Congratulations. Of course, it's your own unique way of doing things, and you come at things with different angles, as you say, a little bit experimentally, but it's got the heart of Patrick Frayne in it. Experts in a dying field. Patrick, it's been great having you back on the programme.
The Last Word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.